Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Health Talk. I'm Zixing.
And I'm Peiling. In today's episode, we discuss the experiences of those who have been affected by border closures and travel restrictions due to the pandemic.
Today, we have Robert with us, and he'll be sharing with us his experience of border closures disrupting his plans. Robert, how about you introduce yourself?
Hi there, thanks for the intro. My name is Robert. I was an exchange student at NUS last year, so starting from July 2019. So that was my year three. And then SEM 2 was when COVID happened. So SEM 1 was totally normal. SEM 2 was when COVID happened. And I ended up staying in Singapore for a while longer, almost like an extra year, while I was doing school back home in Canada, because everything's online. So it ended up working out. Right now, I am in Hong Kong.
That's a really interesting story. There's a lot to unpack there. So COVID pretty much screwed us all over. Our travel plans, education plans, for some of us, even our work plans. So tell us about how COVID personally affected you. For example, how did COVID disrupt your life? And how do you end up staying in Singapore for 1.5 years, even though you're supposed to be here for only a semester exchange?
Actually, 2 semesters. So I was supposed to be in Singapore for a full year anyways. So basically, I'd start off with when COVID first started out. So that was January, February of 2019. Right at the beginning, it seemed like we were just kind of on alert, all the exchange students, because our respective home universities, whether that's back in Canada or in the UK or Germany or wherever else, were all sending messages like, hey, be on alert. And then very soon, I think it was around late February or early March, people started getting called back. Their universities were either pulling them back or their countries were pulling them back. In a very short amount of time, a lot of my fellow exchangers ended up going home. I remember I had one British friend. I saw her one day and we were talking about, are you going back or not? And she's like, no, I'm definitely staying. And then the next day, I saw her in the lobby with her stuff ready to go to Changi. For me, I decided to stay in Singapore. Because one, my university didn't make it compulsory for me to go back. Aside from that, there were a couple logistical issues with going back. I didn't actually have family in Canada at the time. So I go back, but then do what? They're all in China. They're still in China, actually. On the other hand, I also study public health. During my exchange, I was attached to the Sasuihok School of Public Health, which I'm sure y'all are very familiar with. I was really interested in seeing how the pandemic would roll out and how Singapore was going to respond to that. Because it's one thing to observe from the outside and hear all these press briefings and releases, hear about all that from the outside, but it's very, very different to see that from the inside. And so in retrospect, I was really glad with my decision to stay because I end up seeing a lot of things and learning a lot of things that I don't think I would have if I had returned to Canada. In either case, though, I was in a position where I was stuck with that decision because after I decided to stay on, and there was no pressure from NUS to leave, it was just our home universities that were pulling us back. But NUS was like, hey, everything's fine. Stay in Singapore. Soon after that, once most of the exchanges went back home, there were no more flights going back to Canada. And so I was stuck with the decision that I made. It was like that for a couple months. So that would have been circuit breaker and the beginning part of phase one. After that, as we were coming out of lockdown in Singapore, Canada was going into lockdown. Flights soon became available again, but then the situation there was deteriorating. And I had just gone through the circuit breaker in Singapore. I just got through that. I'm not going to go through another one. So I stayed in Singapore for a bit longer.
And I think that's the experience of a lot of international students at my school as well. To make decisions quickly. You never know when the public health regulations are going to change. You just have to make your decision, stick with it. So it's certainly very confusing, disorienting time. I think what you mentioned also was quite interesting because I think a lot of the international students at my school just wanted to leave. They were like, oh, the cases are going up. Okay, let's go back home. But then you mentioning that to get to see the public health perspective here was pretty interesting. I never really thought about it that way. And on that note, I was just wondering also, because you mentioned you only intended to stay for 1 year, but then having to stay on for a year.
I was able to not return to Canada for my year four because everything was online. That was good. But of course, the time zone difference was very brutal, not just with classes, but with CCAs. I had an internship last summer where most of the team was split between Canada or that time zone and Rwanda. And then here's me in Singapore. And it was just 6 hours difference both ways, east and west. Got through that though. Actually, starting from about the summer, it was my plan to get to Hong Kong. And so the infamous air travel bubble. The first one was going to be in November, I think. And I was ready for that, but then popped. And then again in May, so it was set for May 26th, that was just 2 months ago. So I actually got a ticket for the first flight, but then they announced that that was going to get popped again. And then at the same time, Hong Kong redesignated Singapore from a low-risk country to high-risk country, which meant that I wouldn't have been able to get in. So I had less than 3 days notice to pack everything, dispose of things that I couldn't pack or give away, and then fly here.
You mentioned last year you were going to have your internship and whatnot, and then being in different time zones, the travel bubbles getting burst. We're just wondering if you could talk more about what plans do you have for the year where you were supposed to return to Canada? How did they change because of the pandemic, because of the travel restrictions?
If it wasn't for COVID, I probably would have continued on. I still would have done the same summer internship, just I would have actually gone to Rwanda instead of everything being virtual. For my year four, I would have gone back to Canada.
Well, I can't imagine having such interesting plans and having it ruined, like going to Rwanda to actually do an internship there and look at how the public health administration there is like. Given how interested you were in how Singapore would handle COVID, I can't imagine how disappointed you must have been when that internship was transferred to an online one. I'm sure all these disrupted plans and everything must have caused you a lot of uncertainty and honestly a lot of stress. So how do you feel? How was your emotional climate like at a point when you had to make all these fast decisions and give up some plans?
For sure. COVID messed up plans. I think that's the case for most people. For me, though, there was an additional challenge, I guess, or additional responsibility of not just did I have to check Singapore's public health measures and restrictions and all that sort of stuff, which everybody else were keeping up to date on, but also checking how things were back in Canada, worrying about family in China. I guess one thing that was made more difficult because I was not Singaporean and this Canadian in Singapore, kind of away from family and friends back home. And then during circuit breaker and phase one, where you can only interact with people within your household, for me, it was just look in the mirror and that's the only other person. So there was definitely more isolation. I think that's the case for a lot of foreigners, wherever they may be stuck during COVID times. For me, though, one thing that helped a lot was the fact that I was in Singapore for a semester already before COVID happened, made me a lot more confident in making the decision to stay because I knew I still had friends in Singapore. Contrast that with the exchangers who only came for second semester, who were here for only a couple weeks before COVID hit, and they had to decide whether or not to go back home. And their friends mostly are other exchangers. It takes a bit more time to get more integrated and build and develop friendships with Singaporeans. So because I had made a lot of really good Singaporean friends in semester one, and I knew they weren't going anywhere, they didn't have anywhere else to fly back to, I did still get social interactions during that period of time. So that was really great because during lockdown, it's not a time to make new friends. It's more of a time to build on and strengthen existing relationships. So that's something that I did manage to do more into phase one and phase two.
Was this the longest time that you've been away from your friends and family back in Canada or Hong Kong?
It kind of has been. It's been almost approaching 2 years now since I first left. I think it's another thing, though, that made it easier when COVID happened was that I'm already quite used to being away from home. I think that's the case with a lot of international students, even. They're in their upper years, so year one and two, they already learn to cope with feelings of homesickness. For me, it was okay, especially as an upper year student. I think that's something that I managed quite well.
Was there any point where you really missed your family in these past 2 years and you're really like, oh, I really want to go back, but I can't?
Of course, yes. Of course, I miss them. But again, it's another thing because I come from an immigrant background. So I'm second gen immigrant in Canada. My parents had to go through this entire thing where they left home. For them was China. They left and they went a lot longer than just 2 years without seeing family. Even within my family, my dad has worked out of province before for extended periods of time. And mom is very, very busy with work as well. For me, at least, it's been manageable. I'm not accustomed to seeing family every single day or even every single weekend or even every single month. My university is actually quite away from my hometown and my parents moved back to China soon after I went to university. If anything, exchange brought me closer to family.
That's nice. I was just thinking about the point that you made about how you don't see your family every weekend, and that's something a lot of university students like myself take for granted in Singapore. Because in the weekdays, I used to stay on campus and I'll go back to my family on weekends, but you don't get to see your family like that, then it's very different. But no, it was very nice to hear that you at least managed to find a local support system of friends, because in February last year or March last year, I had some exchange students in my class as well, and I didn't really know them very well, but it was just very nice because some of their local friends that they made here were still looking out for them and being like, okay, you need a place to crash, you know, before you go to the airport, crash at my place. That's completely all right. That's really nice. I'm glad you could find that community for yourself. I was just wondering, during this period when you're away from your family, you managed to call them like more often, online calls and whatnot?
Oh yeah, everything's transitioned to virtual now, work and even seeing family. I guess that's even something I did before, WeChat and video chat. Something that I was looking forward to come to Singapore was to celebrate Chinese New Year with my family, which I have not been able to do properly ever. But I've never celebrated Chinese New Year in a place that celebrates it, because back in Canada, you don't get a week off like you do in Singapore. It's just a normal day. Back when I was in Canada for my year one and two at Western University, it wasn't possible for me to go see my parents in China. But this time, being in Singapore and having time off meant I would have been able to go visit my parents in China, and we could do the, I don't even know how describe it, because I don't know what it's actually like. So I don't know even what I would be doing. Whatever the typical Chinese New Year stuff is.
Setting fireworks.
That, yes. But then COVID happened, so I couldn't go over. The second Chinese New Year after COVID happened, which was this February, I actually ended up celebrating it with a bunch of friends who were also in similar positions. They're from either China or Malaysia. They typically do celebrate Chinese New Year, but they can't go back to see their families. And also some other foreigners who from the UK or whatever, who usually don't celebrate Chinese New Year. I think we ate turkey, which is not really something you eat at Chinese New Year, but it was a get together.
I think that's really warm that your social support in Singapore managed to come together to celebrate Chinese New Year, or at least give you a semblance of this celebration. So speaking of things that also went well with you, I want to bring us back to what you mentioned about how the university went online. Did you have to request to the university to continue doing your studies while in another country?
Actually, on that front, I have to say I'm really grateful to both the National University of Singapore and to my home university, Western University, because both were really accommodating and flexible in terms of where I was going to be. NUS was like, it's okay if you stay, but it's also okay if you go back. We can work something out. Their concern was more for, and same for my home university when I was going through year four, my profs were really accommodating to things. That's one thing that I think was really bad for my well-being, mental health-wise, was I just plowed through it. If there's something at 3 a.m., I would go for it. And so my sleep schedule was completely messed up. Instead of asking to be excused or reschedule, I just tried to see how that would go. And it still worked out. But in hindsight, I think it was only workable in the first couple of months. It's not maintainable, because it's one thing to have a completely flipped schedule where you're up at night and asleep during the day. But I still have things going on during the day, whether that's groceries. I can't do groceries at 4 a.m. My sleep schedule was completely gone. And I think that is something that I managed to correct by second semester. Mostly asking for flexibility. That's one thing that I didn't do enough.
That's something that my cousin also experienced. She went to Cedar Exchange in 2020, first half of the year. But of course, she got called back by our home university due to concerns about safety and COVID. And in the end, she had lessons that would happen at 10 p.m., go on all the way to 2 a.m. And for her, she couldn't cope with it. She would really be half asleep while just having the laptop on with the lecturer speaking. And when she had tests at 10 p.m., that was the worst. I can't imagine how that must have affected you.
That's definitely a very good skill to have, the skill of self-advocacy, whether you're in a pandemic or not. I'm also thinking about how that plays out also in terms of workplaces, maybe because of the whole work-from-home arrangements. People are like, we can totally eat up into your employees' time past working hours, but that skill of self-advocacy would be very important and apply that all the same. You just have to stress your boundaries. This is what works for me. If possible, can you meet me here? For instance, if lessons with the professors or a particular lecture or tutorial is at a certain time that's late in the night, you would still go for that. Did you ask the professor for accommodations?
One thing that my university did was a lot of our classes were asynchronous, or if they were live, they would be recorded. There was more flexibility in terms of attendance. But then, of course, there's things where you have to meet up, for example, tutorial groups or CCAs. I did a lot of CCAs and that involved a lot of Zoom meetings. For those things, there is usually a little less flexibility. But when it comes to tests, if there's a test at 3, 4 a.m., most of my profs in that situation were flexible in that they would allow me to write it a bit earlier. Just special consideration there, because even though I don't want to be an inconvenience and I do want to write it at 3 or 4 a.m., I know that's probably a bad idea. I'd do okay, but my performance isn't where it would be otherwise. So I'd ask for accommodation there.
So through this online learning, you also had this experience of learning when you will limit yourself to say that, no, I won't be able to do this well. I won't be able to give my best if I continue pressing on at this rate or this timing.
I think it's about being pragmatic, which is definitely something I picked up from my time in Singapore. It's not pragmatic to write an exam at 4 a.m.
I just wanted to scoot back to earlier the part where you talked about being away from your family and friends. I was just thinking, because you said you've been away from your family for 2 years, do you think, and it's okay if nothing has changed, but do you think your relationships, your family or friends, do you feel like they've changed?
I feel most of my relationships are quite low maintenance. I'm not the kind of person that if we're friends, we have to text every single day. And if we stop doing that, then that means we're no longer friends or we're no longer family or whatever. Again, it's not practical to sustain constant communication.
I feel like this attitude of doing what is necessary and making all these pragmatic decisions has really got you through this pandemic. Like when you were thinking of, should I stay in Singapore or should I go back to Canada? Looking at the situation, okay, I'll go with this. Should I continue with this sleep schedule or not? Okay, let's look at what I can deal with. If not, we'll try to change the timing. So I'm just wondering, do you have any last advice to give our listeners who might also be in a similar experience of being across borders alone?
Good question. I think it depends on the individual. So for me, I don't really like to be socially isolated. I like to interact with people. And for me, physical interactions are also really important. Maybe not physically touching, but seeing another person in real life. For me, it was really important to find opportunities to avoid isolation, because isolation can lead to feelings of loneliness. Some people, though, they can be isolated and they don't feel lonely at all. And then some people, they're not isolated at all. They're interacting with a lot of people, but they still have feelings of loneliness. For, I think, most people, and for me personally, I knew that isolation would lead to feelings of loneliness. So one thing that I did, even as most things shut down, was I volunteered at this local NGO that provides anonymous HIV testing services. So that service was still running for most of the period of time where most other things like retail shops was shut down and everything else was moving online. That was still in person. It is an essential service that could only be delivered in that format at the time. And I think that as much as the people who use the service benefited from it, only in hindsight, I realized that I also needed that. Because, I mean, that was the only human-to-human interactions that I had. So that was really good in terms of addressing the isolation. So that helped to keep off feelings of loneliness from festering.
I think that's really amazing that even when in a different country, you manage to pick up a local project to add on to whatever is already on your plate. As you mentioned, depending on each person, some people might need a little bit more social interaction, and finding these opportunities, especially volunteer opportunities, would be really beneficial for both ways, because you get your social interactions and you are also able to help benefit a cause.
I would just like to clarify, that's not the only reason I did it. Now that you phrase it that way, it sounds very transactional. It was just a side benefit.
Thank you so much for your advice and sharing your experiences. Anything else you'd like to add, Robert?
Yeah, actually tying in with why I did that volunteering, I certainly have not had the best experience through this pandemic, but at the same time, my experience hasn't been the worst by far. Just the fact that I'm here able to talk to you guys already means I'm healthy. I've been able to avoid, unlike millions of people who have already died from COVID or are still suffering from it. It's important to remember that even though we ourselves might be suffering and going through a lot of hardship right now, that other people also are going through the same thing. I think making this observation, it makes us feel more together. It also helps to fight this feeling of loneliness because everyone's going through stuff right now. And it's also important to remember that it's not just to make ourselves feel better, but also I think we should remember that there are people going through worse stuff right now, and we need to do what we can as well to help them if we can in any capacity. And especially once you're okay, I'm in a better position to help other people who are not okay.
That's super wholesome. It's very important, I think, because a lot of people, we get caught up in our own experiences also in this pandemic for very valid reasons. But also, I think, especially in a time like right now where there's a lot of finger pointing going on and animosity and whatnot, especially in Singapore, then it's ever more important to, like you said, reach out to other people and see who, what areas can be helped. It's a super wholesome way to end things off with this podcast episode.
I think what you say is very true and very wholesome. Taking a step back to assess your situation and understand that while I might be facing this, there are also other things that I can do and that I can help in.
It's been great talking to you. It's been great you share your experiences with us so candidly. We wish you all the best for everything else that we're going to embark on, and hope you stay safe and hope you stay healthy. Thank you for your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming down with us.
Thanks for inviting me. I really enjoyed the conversation that we've just had, and I hope that for your listeners that it can prove to be insightful.
Certainly. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
If you want to find out more about youth experiences with COVID or hear about similar experiences, follow us on our social media platforms at Heart to Health Talk. That's at Heart to Health Talk, where additional resources and nuggets of wisdom can be found. Hope to catch you in the next episode. Bye!